All right, everybody, Terrence Pop here with another episode of Live from the Lair. And today, I'm going to take you down memory lane here in regards to the deployment of Company F-425 LRS Airborne Infantry in Iraq in 2004. Now, I've spent the past couple days going through a lot of the old photographs. I sent some emails to individuals who were on this deployment to see if they had any pictures. They sent me a few, but I went through them, and I'm trying to not show as many faces because I don't want anybody to sue me or get upset, you know. Number one. Number two, these pictures are not exactly in order from start to finish. But I'm going to do the best I can to fill you in on them.
The world does not cater to intelligent people. It revolves around the lowest common denominator. And that's why most humans are easily manipulated sheeple who will put up with anything as long as they get their lard-fried burgers from a hole in the wall, free porn, and two-day shipping. Curse of the High IQ dives into what it's like having your mind held hostage by boring idiots in the rat race of humanity. The cheese is in the description.
All right, now this particular one here is basically the unit is palletizing, getting ready to, you know, go to Iraq. And you can see right there, you see the boxes. Each one of those boxes is either an individual soldier box, then you had a team box, and you probably had a platoon box. And in fact, each platoon had its own, like, Connex that went forward. And this is just a bunch of the bullshit. And you'll see here on the top, these are a bunch of cots and stuff that went over. As far as I know, only maybe 30 to 40% of these cots actually returned via, you know, the stateside. So we'll see if we can go on to the next one here. All right, this is me. You guys have seen the photograph of me with the sucker in my mouth. This is at Fort Bliss when we were staging in the big circus tents to go forward into Iraq. Yeah, it kind of sucked, but what are you gonna do? Now, it is what it is. At that time of the year, it was kind of hot, and a lot of the chocolate melted and stuff. I love chocolate, but those are a close second, and those are charms, basically charms suckers with bubble gum in them, and they were great. I usually got the watermelon, cherry, and some strawberries. Didn't really care for those. Sour apple was good too. Alright, here's another one of me. Now look, fucking, I'm like 34 here. Yeah. Hopefully I don't look, you know, super old compared to that picture there, but you know, what are you going to do? I weighed like, I think it was like 187, 190 right there. And this morning I got on the scale, it was like 204. I'm trying to get back to 190, but we'll see. Yeah, in the haircut, they didn't have barbers, so I just shaved the sides of my head after I got a high and tight, and I let the top grow. And I didn't give a shit. And you'll see here, I was a master sergeant when I went over there. And then I was promoted to first sergeant after the first sergeant that we deployed with was fired for bigotry and troop abuse. So that's it. All right. Now, this is all the horse shit that went forward. All right. Those are all the pallets. They've already been weighed. They're underneath the nets. Everything's cinched down. Those are our 5 tons, and then to the other side are the Humvees we went with. Now, they put this, all of this went on, I think, 3 or 4 C-5As. If you have never been in a C-5A, it's very close to a C-17, just a little bigger. It is insane, and those were basically designed and flown during Vietnam and in the 70s. They brought these C-5As out of mothball to, you know, support this mission, and boy, was it a load of fun! All right, again, there's the Humvees we sent forward. You'll see there, those are just regular Humvees with the doors taken off. Okay, the doors on those are worthless when it comes to virtually anything other than rain and wind. So they just, we just basically put them in the back and went forward like that. And a lot of guys drove their Humvees without the doors for virtually entire deployment. So it is an absolute miracle that we didn't get more people wounded or killed. I was amongst one of the soldiers that was wounded the most. I had to get medevaced back to Langstuhl, Germany, and that was basically in the first week of November. So there you go. All right, now I talked in one of my Lair videos about the shit bingo game. Now, apparently, this is right before we go to Iraq. We're supposed, like, I thought we were flying directly into Kuwait. This changed at the last minute. And while we're there at Fort Bliss in the big circus tents waiting to fly over, we had a first lieutenant come out and say, I had to put an individual at this table, and before he could go back to use the stall, I had to take his ID card, put it on the number of the stall he was using, and then when he was done, I had to, before I gave him his ID back, I had to go back and inspect the stall. I basically told the LT, okay, so basically you want it clean in the morning, and, you know, that'll be that. And he was such an asshole, like, no, you're going to put a guy here at that table who's going to do this all night. So I did put people at the table until right around 10 o'clock. Then I sent everyone to bed. And then, you know, some individuals came in after the fact. And you can see how they wrote fuck you on the table with the numbers. And then somebody called it shit bingo. Please destroy our morale more before, you know, you fool. And I mean, this is literally like 1 or 2 days before we fly out. And I remember the lieutenant came back and said he was going to tell the colonel, and I laughed in his face, and I said, what are you going to do? Send us to Iraq? Shut the fuck up and get out of here. Now, this is where we lived in the big circus tents before we flew out Fort Bliss, supposedly to Kuwait, which we found out later was directly into Iraq because the company commander we had falsified our training records so we wouldn't have to go through Kuwait. Which was a travesty, was absolute horseshit. I have no idea why he wasn't relieved for cause on this. This was a big no. That is a C-5A. Looks really close to a C-17. I believe the C-5A is maybe 3 or 4 feet taller, and I think it's got like maybe 10 or 11 more feet in the wings. And the one we flew in on actually had one of the engines basically fly off over Baghdad a couple months prior to us flying in. It was very exciting for the crews. Here's us doing our duffel bag drag to the C-5As. And you can see we're wearing the old ACE, not the ACUs, but the desert camouflage right here. DCUs, I believe they're called. They're not the chocolate chips. Though I like those better, but, you know, you get what you get, you don't throw a fit. And somewhere I still have these in a box. I might sell them on the site and, you know, recoup some money on those. All right, now this is the inside of a C-5A. Everything's chained down, ready to go. You can see here there's no doors. There are the chains. And we stayed in a compartment up top. Okay, again, this is looking out the entire cargo bay of all the pallets and Connexes and so forth. And those things are amazing how much shit they will carry. I'm just going to say that right now. All right, this is us in the upper deck here waiting to fly over. I do not know if this is my C5A or not. The one I was in caught on fire, and we had a bunch of smoke in this cabin up here, which caused no end of problems. Okay, this is us when we landed directly in Iraq. They opened the C5A, and now we're unloading all of our shit. All right, now this particular is this picture here. I don't know exactly when in the deployment this is, but this is basically what the inside of a standard Humvee looked like. This is basically one that the lower enlisted would have. Now, if you see right here, this is a bulletproof vest here. Now, we went forward and there was a big hootie-doo about us not getting Kevlar vests and what have you, and it caused all kinds of problems. And these vests were sent to us by the Detroit Police Department and the Michigan State Police, who sent us a lot of their older bulletproof vests and stuff to use in the vehicles and to wear and so forth. And, you know, that's just the way it is. Okay, this is the strap here for the gunner. Basically, you could sit down in here and drive around. A lot of guys took this out and didn't use it. They stood the entire time. I, myself, when I rode gun, would use this to, relax from time to time. And this part here is real wide in the Humvees. And then between the... this is supposed to be the commander's seat right here, and this is the driver's seat. This is a big space, and you see there's a space here for the radio and all the commo gear. So in a Humvee, which is loud as shit, you have all of this crap between you and the driver. You, in this seat right here, are somehow in charge of the vehicle. I basically thought that was a bunch of bullshit, so I would always sit, here's the driver, I would sit back here behind the driver, so I can see what the driver saw. I didn't have to yell real loud, over whatever what was going on. I could literally lean forward and talk into the driver's ear or hit him on the shoulder to have him, turn however way I wanted him to go. All right, now this is us getting ready at Victory to drive to Abu Ghraib prison. These are our vehicles that came with us from Michigan. I think we had 3 5-tons and, 13 or 14 Humvees with trailers and so forth. So, all right, again, this is us pulling up to Abu Ghraib, getting ready to go in there. And you can see here all of our, crap that we have in the long, basically parade of bullshit. So it is what it is. Listen, if you are Haji, you literally just had to sit outside the walls here and you could count all of the men, all of the vehicles and everything as it pulled in, and you know exactly what was inside. All right, this is the view from a tower. You'll see here, this is an M60 machine gun. There's a backup M4 here, spotting scopes, and what have you. This is one of the towers around Abu Ghraib prison where 3rd Platoon basically did a majority of the guard tower time for the first 2 months we were in, or month and a half we were in country. It was very punishing. And on top of that, 3rd Platoon ran the towers and did convoy security, virtually getting 4 hours or less a night of sleep for 2 months. Alright, now this is what we would see from the night vision goggles, and this was from basically one of our patrols we had put outside the walls basically to patrol around Abu. And on this particular night, we took some mortar fire, and what you see here is a fuel blivet that went up and was basically a direct hit, caught on fire. And I believe this is the one where an individual was killed and basically cremated in the burning JP-8. All that was left was his boots and some bones in the morning, which is a whole other story. It's nightmare fuel. We won't go into it here. This is a helicopter basically flying over Abu. I believe that's an Apache coming on station to go after the people who are rocketing and mortaring our FOB, which stands for Forward Operating Base. Now, this particular one is from Tower 4. And this guy here was, I believe, a doctor slash veterinarian. Here are some of the apartment buildings. And right here, you see the top of a mosque. Okay, and over here is an adjoining building that supports the mosque. On a couple occasions from this tower, you were able to see crowds of 1,200 to 2,500 people gathering in the street that were going to basically attack the prison. We had a Lieutenant Colonel Edwards, who was a complete fucking idiot for the 202 MI, wanted to send out one of my LURS teams to the top of this apartment building so we could see what was going on in the street. And we had absolutely no plan on how to, you know, exfil these guys if 2,000 people who are right there decide to bum rush them and kill my team. Okay. Utter bullshit. And I basically pulled out regulations on the battalion commander and basically threatened his fucking career, because there's nothing you can't see here from Tower 4 that you wouldn't be able to see from here. So putting out my LURS team in this dangerous position is absolutely stupid. All right, next one. All right, this is individuals who lived in those apartments. This was very common. Every day, laundry was out. There was kids playing, the whole deal. This is a farther look back at the at this apartment building here. Now, this particular apartment, I believe shortly after this was taken, took a direct rocket hit from Haji firing some Kardush rockets off of the overpass to the spaghetti loop that was just shy, or maybe about a mile away from the prison. And I actually had to pull some strings and have an SF team come and take a little girl that was wounded here to the green zone for medical attention, because I could not get these people that were hurt in this attack onto Abu, because our cache was like, no, we're not here to support the local populace. We're here to support wounded soldiers. That rocket came from Haji. It affected Haji. We're not touching it, which I can understand. Kind of a dick move, but it was out of my wheelhouse. I pulled the strings that were necessary to do what needed to be done. It's pretty much what I always do. Now here, this is weird here. I believe this is the Polish contingent here with these Soviet armored personnel vehicles. Now, I'm going to be honest, you know, the Soviet armored personnel vehicles, in my opinion, are better than what we have in the United States. They're way better than the 113s. And you can do a lot more with them. Now, are they as good as the Bradleys? Not really. Those are infantry fighting vehicles. They're, you know, not armored personnel carriers. More scenery here from outside the FOB. This was very common to, you know, what we saw on a daily basis in and around Iraq. All right, again, we're driving down the road. We always had kids that would come out. For some reason, they always knew when we were going to roll. And they would beg for shit. It would be come down from higher not to give them stuff. But we got so much bullshit from stateside, from everybody and their mother sending us care packages. Literally, stuff was rotting. So we'd put it in bags or whatever and just hand it out to the kids. We didn't fucking care. They were starving anyway, you know, good on them. All right, this here, now for those of you who have ever done a change of command inventory, this is what it looks like. Now, this is basically the layout after Commander Worthless was relieved for, I think, 3 or 4 weeks while a big investigation was going on. And he was getting investigated for falsifying training records, troop abuse, and bigotry. But somehow he was able to come back because it would have caused a big hootie-doo between the Michigan Guard and the active army. Michigan Guard was running top cover for him and the first sergeant, who were blatantly just fucked up. All right. Now, this is all of the stuff here for the entire company. You can see all the bayonets. And you got the night vision. You got all the crap here. Now, it's not all there, because we had soldiers, you know, doing stuff out and about that, you know, didn't put their stuff here. But, you know, this is pretty much what a layout looks like for anyone who served in, you know, the Army, the National Guard, or the Marines. All right. This is some of the black market ammo and dunnage we got from other units that were leaving when we got there. Now, none of this was on the books. We showed up and like, hey, would you like some ammo? Or like, fuck yeah. And literally they showed up in a truck and we got, you know, cans of grenades wrapped in tape. They still have their pins in them, but they don't come in the cardboard tubes, because, you know, this is all stuff that was issued out to soldiers, taken back and thrown in here, and they had to get rid of it. And we took everything. We didn't turn any of this away. All right, now this is actually a little later in the cycle. This is, I believe this is 1st or 3rd Platoon's area. And you can see here, there had a place here to look at, overheads and PowerPoint pictures and stuff like that. And they're prepping intel for the mission that's going to take place the next day. Okay. All right, here you got some Blackhawks coming in, and they are escorted by Apaches. I believe there's 2 Blackhawks and 2 Apaches here, which was par for the course. We saw helicopters all the time. Victory was about 8 or 9 miles away, right down the road. And I built into, when I was the NCOIC for security for Abu Ghraib, I put together the plan where we would all walk the fuck out of there and road march to victory if we had to abandon Abu. All right, this is a chow hall, and I believe this is on Victory. Victory had a bunch of different chow halls, but they looked very similar. This one, I believe, was run by an American company, Brown and Root, and served, you know, basically American food, which I'm a fan of since I'm an American. There you go. All right. And I don't believe this one had the omelets made to order, but you can't get everything. All right. Now, this is another chow hall, which is up north in Iraq. When you hear about the mortar attack or the bombing that took place in the chow hall, which was up near Kirkuk, this is it right here. In fact, that particular bomb went off literally at the table where I usually ate my breakfast every time I went up there, which was, I think, 4 times. So it's pretty creepy when we got those in sums from the craziness that was going on up there. Again, now this is the inside of a Humvee that is basically belonging to a squad leader, platoon sergeant, platoon leader. You'll see here, you got the Blue Force tracker bullshit here. It's got its own keyboard. Here's your 2 different goddamn radios. So how the hell is the vehicle commander here supposed to yell across all of this horse shit, you know, and actually get anything done? I mean, some of the dead driver drills, you're supposed to be able to reach across and grab the driver. You cannot reach the driver with all of this horse shit here. Again, I made the case. I would sit behind the driver back here and, do my deal. All right, now, this is an 04. The big push was an 03. We saw this all the time. These are buildings that were hit with 500 and 1,000 pound bombs, and they're wiped out. Look at that one. That one, it came through the roof and basically gutted every single floor. And out here is a lot of the wreckage that was moved out and left. I don't even know if this has been cleaned up or not. I assume with enough time it has been. You know, that was 2004. That was 15, almost 16 years ago. All right, now here is four of the Humvees staging for a convoy op between Abu and Victory. And you'll see here, those are pig iron doors. These are not up armored at all. There's not even a chicken plate in front of the gunners. But it, you know, you go to war with what you got, and that's pretty much what we did. Okay. Here is a view from the top of the cell block where my company was. And this is basically the bunker I was having constructed from all of the disciplinary cases. They would have to fill sandbags and put them up here. And, you know, so many sandbags a day or whatever. Now, if you'll see out here, you see all of these concrete walls and stuff. This is in the middle of Abu Ghraib prison. This area here we called the kill zone because almost all the mortar attacks landed in this area right here. Now off to the left front here, you can't really see it, but off in this direction is the chow hall. Now our battalion commander wanted to have trailers moved in here and then move every one of us from our company out into this fucking, basically an area where people would get killed. So I started it's called it the death lottery. And I basically went out and I drew a map of all of this. And then I had numbers assigned to all of the stations. And, you know, if you basically picked the right number and somebody got wounded, I think you got like a day off. If they got killed, you got like a 3-day weekend. I got, and this is before any of this has been set up. I just fucking did it, and I put it up in my company area, out in the hall. I got called by the battalion commander, who ripped me a new one for doing this, and he said, "How can you profit from other soldiers' death?" And I looked right at him, and I said, "Exactly. You're doing the same thing. You want to get promoted, and it doesn't matter how many of my dudes you fucking march out there into the open kill zone. You don't give a fuck." Because they didn't give a fuck about National Guard soldiers. They look down on you. They look at you as a slave, and they treat you like absolute shit. All right, now I'm going to have to cut this one short here because we have gone way too long. I'm going to pick this up after the next one. We'll probably have this in 2 or 3 episodes. I will talk to you guys later.